Welcome to this interview. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Margaret Paul. She's a best-selling author of 12 published books, a relationship expert, and co-creator of the powerful inner bonding self-healing process. She's appeared on numerous radio and television shows, including Oprah, and has successfully worked with hundreds of thousands and taught classes and seminars around the world for over 54 years. Her most recent book is Lonely No More, The Astonishing Power of Inner Bonding. Margaret Paul, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here and talk about anxiety, one of my favorite topics to talk about.
I know it's one that's close to your heart and that you have experience with. So I'd love to start if we can talk about what the two major causes of anxiety are.
Well, there's actually more than two, but the major causes of anxiety are emotional self-abandonment, where we judge ourselves, we ignore our feelings, we just treat ourselves the ways that many of us were treated when we were growing up, and we abandon ourselves, and that creates a lot of anxiety. The other major cause of it is eating badly, because when you eat badly, when you eat junk food, when you eat processed food, when you eat sugar and all that stuff, it wrecks the microbiome. And what happens is that it creates a lot of toxicity in the body, and that toxicity goes up into the brain, and it can create anxiety and depression and all kinds of illnesses. And of course, that's very common in our culture. There is another reason for anxiety, and that is unhealed trauma. Whether it's trauma from childhood, whether it's trauma from war or accidents, but unhealed trauma creates a lot of anxiety as well.
I want to go back to all three of those and dig in a little bit deeper because you're so right. So let's start with self-abandonment. And that ties in a little bit into trauma in some ways, but I don't think, because I think a lot of people know how much food contributes to their overall health and even their mental health and their well-being. So we'll get into that in a second. But I don't think people really identify themselves as being what they're doing as being self-abandonment until somebody puts it into context. And so what might somebody, how might they behave when they're abandoning self? What kind of thoughts might be going through their head? What kind of things might they be feeling when they're in a self-abandonment phase that they might not be aware of?
So let's take an example. Let's say that somebody is aware of feeling anxious, but usually they think that it's something external. Something's going on externally, either with a partner, a child, or a friend, or in the world, or whatever, or at work, or money. And certainly those things can cause anxiety. But one of the major reasons is the way that they're dealing with it. So when somebody comes to me with anxiety, I will have them take a deep breath into the anxiety, and I will have them open to learning about it, because usually what people do is they do anything they can to ignore it. And so they'll judge themselves for feeling anxious. They'll stay up in their head and ignore their anxiety. They'll stuff themselves with food, or they'll go on TV or on the internet, or they'll overwork, or they'll watch pornography, or they'll do anything to avoid the feelings, or they're going to blame something external. They're going to blame a partner, or they're going to blame somebody else, or they're going to blame a situation. So if I have them breathe in and say, what are you doing? What are you telling yourself? How are you treating yourself that's causing this anxiety? Then they start to become aware. Oh, I'm beating myself up. I'm telling myself I'm not good enough. I'm telling myself I better not fail. I better say the right thing. I never do anything right. I'm unworthy. I'm unlovable. These are the kinds of things that people tell themselves a lot. Well, imagine if you had a child and you were saying to the child, oh, you're not worthy, you're not lovable, you're not good enough, you're not important, or treating the child that way, and then telling the child, well, unless you perform right and get that person's approval or that person's approval, you're not okay. Don't you think the child would feel very anxious? Well, that's what happens on the inner level. When we're judging ourselves that way, which is so common, just about everybody I work with has learned to judge themselves as not being good enough, not being lovable, not being worthy. And so that's a major cause of anxiety. And then if you have a child who comes to you upset, and instead of dealing with the upset, you hand the child a cookie, put them in front of the TV, tell them there's nothing to cry about, or basically just stay on the internet and ignore them, of course they're going to feel anxious. But this is what we do to ourselves. We ignore our feelings. We stuff our feelings in some way with some addiction, alcohol, drugs, whatever. And then let's say that child comes to us and instead of dealing with the child, we go try and find a neighbor to deal with the child, or we make somebody else responsible. Well, that's what we're doing on the inner level. We're making somebody else. We're blaming somebody else rather than learning to take responsibility for our own feelings. And so that's a huge reason why people are anxious. And even with trauma, like childhood trauma or trauma from an adult situation, like an accident or whatever, even there, people are treating themselves so badly. They're judging themselves for it. So often, we treat ourselves the ways that our parents treated themselves or treated us. And so we're often re-traumatizing ourselves over and over again. And that's why many of the therapies for the trauma, they don't last. People will do these therapies and they'll help for the moment. But if they're treating themselves badly, they're re-traumatizing themselves. And so they still feel that from how they're treating themselves. And so it's so important for people to become aware that so much of their anxiety is because of what they're doing inside with themselves.
Absolutely. It rings so true. And so often people end up in therapy if they get there, which is good, right? It's acute situations, right? I'm struggling in this situation with work, with a coworker, with a boss, or I'm having trouble in my relationship, and they're trying to deal with an acute anxiety, an acute situation. And while it might happen that somebody can guide you through that situation, what will probably happen, and what I hear you saying, is that that anxiety, that underlying anxiety, that unhealed part of you that experiences the anxiety, it's going to come up again in a different situation down the road if we don't get at the way that we're talking to ourselves, treating ourselves, abandoning ourselves, because those things, those outside circumstances will continue to change and life will continue to happen if you don't understand how to really have your own back.
Well, that's right. And even if there's not an outside situation that's happening, if people are treating themselves that way in an ongoing way, they're going to feel anxious a lot of the time. You know, so often when I work with somebody and I ask them to go into how they feel, they'll say, well, I got this pit in my stomach, but it's always there. Well, that's their anxiety. And that's because they're abandoning themselves, probably emotionally and often physically as well, by what they eat.
Yeah. And just a quick note on that too, to circle back for just a second. I was one of those people that had that constant state of anxiety so long that I didn't know that it was not a part of me.
Right.
Right. And Society and culture and capitalism reward the behaviors that anxiety is advantageous for, right? Like I was like, this is my superpower. I can get so much done. I can exercise and I can get all these things done. And I never drop any balls because I'm too worried about everything and everyone all the time. And then it just doesn't work anymore. Something happens and we don't have to go into it, but everybody knows there's a moment where you're like, oh, this actually doesn't feel great at all. And this is actually not going to work long-term and I'm going to have to stop doing this. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, how long have I felt this way? Oh,
That's
forever,
right.
Actually. Oh, right. Wow. Is there a different way? And then it begins, right?
Yeah, then it, hopefully then it begins. Hopefully people don't just turn to medication or their various addictions to numb it out, which unfortunately happens a lot, as you know. And the main thing is like when you were doing all that, you were not having fun.
I
Life
was
wasn't
just thinking about
fun.
this the other day, Margaret, that I was thinking about. I didn't often reflect on all the things that I accomplished in the first 20 years of my career because I was just so like, and I will tell stories to people about the things that I did in the first 20 years of my career, and they'll be like, "Oh my gosh, you've done like a remarkable amount of stuff." And I'm like, "I didn't feel any of it. I don't remember any of it. I didn't recognize any of it because I was so gripped with fear and anxiety that I couldn't actually appreciate any of the experiences that I was having. I mean, that's the cost of this, right?"
Oh yeah. And because of the ways that people are abandoning themselves, they're not feeling their feelings. They know they're stressed, they know they're tense, but they're up in their head. Our feelings are in our body. And when you learn to be in your body and present the way we were born in our body with our feelings. We learn to go up in our head. But when we get back in there, we think, oh my God, look how I've been living. Look what I've been ignoring. This is not living. This is not fun. And you realize that, like you did, that you can't go on this way. Eventually, it makes people sick.
Absolutely. And that energy that you spoke of earlier, too, all of the energy that you expend avoiding the way that you're feeling. And I have a lot of addiction in my family, and I've never had addiction issues myself, but I do often say, and this is not hyperbole, that I was addicted to anxiety. That was the way that I had, that was the way my addictive, like genetic tendencies manifested, was like just anxiety. And needed that feeling in order to feel alive and to feel like I was alert in the world and prepared and all of those things.
Yeah, and I find that often that people think that they're successful, like work with a lot of successful people, and they really believe that they're successful because they're anxious and they're judging themselves and they're driving themselves. And what I know is that they're successful in spite of that, and that they can have the same level of success if they learn how to be what we call a loving adult, which is when you're living from your heart, you're highly motivated, because when we're living from our heart, we really want to offer our gifts to the world. We don't just want to sit on a couch and do nothing, but we do it from love, not from fear. We do it because we want to contribute, not because, oh my God, I've got to finish this and I've got to do that in order to be okay. That's the fear that we're not going to be okay. And so you probably thought that your success was coming from the motivation from anxiety, and yet it was actually getting in your way.
Well,
And
and
I'm sure.
yeah, I'm so sorry. You said that so perfectly because I think a lot of people can relate to this, which is you fear that if you heal your anxiety, or if you calm down, or if you stop, or you slow down, or you heal, you're gonna lose your edge. You're gonna lose your
That's right.
drive, right? That, and I actually, for the first 20 years, never ever described myself as ambitious. I always said I was ambitious adjacent. I had a great like talent for like aligning myself next to somebody who was really ambitious. And I find myself way more ambitious now than I ever was in the first 20 years because it comes from abundance instead of fear and lack.
That's right. That's right. And that's what people don't realize. So many people, oh no, I can't give up my self-judgment. It's my self-judgment that has motivated me. If I judge myself enough, I'll get myself to do everything right, and that's where my success is. And they don't realize that they're actually limiting themselves, that they're limiting their creativity, they're limiting their aliveness, they're limiting their joy. If you look at a little kid, they don't sit on a couch and sit there and veg out. They're busy. They're going. They're doing. They're learning. They're interested. They're curious. That's who we naturally are. And when we learn to love ourselves rather than abandon ourselves, which is what I teach in inner bonding, then we're so much more motivated than when we're coming from fear. Yes, fear can certainly motivate people. We see that around the world, that fear can motivate people, but not to be loving, not to be creative, not to fully offer the gifts of who they are, what they came to offer the planet. I believe that we came here to evolve in our ability to love and to offer our gifts, to manifest our gifts through our love on the planet. We each have incredible gifts. Our souls are so blessed with incredible gifts. But when we judge ourselves, when we ignore our feelings, when we numb out with addictions, when we blame outside things and people, we are so limiting ourselves, not only feeling anxious and stressed, which can cause so much illness, but we can't find our creativity. We can't find that. And that is so powerful when we start to love ourselves, to really see and value ourselves, which is what we teach in Inner Bonding. Wow, everything starts to explode. It's a totally different life.
Absolutely. Okay, so you teed us up perfectly. So can you tell us a little bit about Inner Bonding and how it helps us heal anxiety and kind of come home to ourselves?
Yeah, so Inner Bonding is a 6-step pathway to learning to love ourselves, learning to see and value ourselves. It's about learning to be present in our body, which is step one. We have to be willing to be in our body. We have to be willing to feel our feelings in order to learn what we're doing that's causing them. It's about in Inner Bonding, there's only two intentions. One is the intention to learn about what's loving to ourselves and others. And the other is the intention to protect against pain with various forms of controlling behavior. Now, virtually all of us have learned to do that. We learned in our families, we learned through media, we learned in school to control, to protect, to avoid our painful feelings. And so that's kind of the default setting. And that's where the self-abandonment comes from. Because that we call that part of us the wounded self. It's an ego wounded self. And it's filled with fears and false beliefs. And all it wants to do is have control over getting love, avoiding pain, and feeling safe. And it thinks it can do that. But it's really a child and adolescent aspect of us that is so limiting us, that absorb these beliefs as we were growing up, but that are not relevant now. So in step two of Inner Bonding, we consciously open to learning about loving ourselves and others so that we don't go to that default setting of control. And we teach people to open to their higher self, whatever they want to call that, their older, wiser self, God, spirit, angel, whatever they want to call that. That's our higher soul that we can tap into that can help guide us. And we invite in the love and the compassion and the strength and the wisdom and the courage and the truth of our higher self into our heart. And we become what we call for that moment, a loving adult. And as that loving adult, we go back into the feelings, the anxiety, the depression, the guilt, the shame, the aloneness, the anger, the jealousy. These are the wounded feelings that we create with our self-abandonment. Or we go into the core feelings of life, the existential pain, the loneliness, the grief, the heartbreak, the helplessness over others. But if we don't learn to manage those feelings, then we cover them up with all of these self-abandoning behaviors, and we create the anxiety and all of these other feelings. And so we go in step three to learn, how are we treating ourselves? What are we telling ourselves? What are we doing or not doing? And we go inside to that inner child. That's our feeling self. That's the part of us that's feeling anxiety. And we go and we ask, how am I treating you? What am I telling you? And that inner child, if that part of us feels safe enough to tell us, might say, well, you're putting all this pressure on me. You're judging me all the time. You're telling me I better be perfect. I better say the right thing. I better do a good job. If this person or that person doesn't like me or approve of me, I'm not okay. So you got to do this and you got to do that. Well, of course, that's going to create anxiety. And then when we understand what we're doing, we go a little deeper as to why are we doing it? And this is where we go into that ego wounded self. And we say, there must be a good reason. that you're treating the inner child this way? What are you trying to control or avoid or protect against? And that's when we become aware of our false beliefs. Oh, I've got to judge myself to motivate myself to do everything right, that kind of thing. Or I'm not okay unless I get approval. Because most people just don't know how to define their intrinsic worth. And so there's all kinds of false beliefs that come up. And once we see what we're doing and why we're doing it, then we go to step four, which is we open to our higher self, our higher guidance, whatever that is for a person. And we ask, first of all, if we became aware of any false beliefs, we say, what's the truth? Is it true that if I'm perfect, I can control how people feel about me? Well, I had to learn that that wasn't true. I was a perfectionist. I had to learn, no, you know what? Everybody decides how they feel about me. I don't have that control. And so we start to learn about what the truth is. And then we ask, what is loving to me? What is in my highest good? What would a loving adult do for a child, my inner child, in this situation? Now, it does take time and practice for people to access, because accessing your higher guidance is about frequency. And it takes two major things to have a high enough frequency. One is being in a true intention to learn about love, and the other is feeding yourself well, clean, organic food. And that raises the frequency enough to access that higher guidance, which is always here. It's always here for us. We were not put on this planet without guidance. That guidance is always here. And in fact, that's how I do a lot of my work. I was just leading a group, and a woman came on with a very difficult situation that happened when she gave birth. And she was feeling really bad about it. And I got a download from her guidance. I can hear when I'm in that state, I can hear mine, I can hear other people's about what was going on for her after she was born that contributed to what was going on in this situation. She had no idea. But when I said it, she burst into tears. Oh my God, I never thought of that. So that guidance is here. I'm in touch with it all the time because I've been practicing this for a long time. But anybody can learn to access what the truth is, what's loving to them. And it's such a relief to know that we are always being guided in our highest good and that we can tap into what's loving to us. And then in step five, we do whatever we're guided to do. We take the loving action. And once we've done that, then we check in again with our feelings. And when we take a loving action, we will feel relief. We'll feel a lot of relief. And that lets us know that we are being a loving adult and taking loving action for ourselves. So that's a very brief overview of inner bonding. It's an extremely powerful process. And I'm sure you can begin to see that if people actually do this, they don't feel anxious very often. They're learning to take care of themselves. I used to be an extremely anxious person. I mean, I was anxious from the time I was a kid. My mother took me to a psychiatrist when I was five because I was so anxious all the time. And I was anxious until inner bonding came in, actually came in through spirit. And I was 45 years old. I'd been anxious the whole time. But when I started to do inner bonding, I realized how I was treating myself. And I'm rarely anxious these days.
I love that story. Okay, I want to come back because in the six steps, I was thinking about the six steps. I was like, gosh, all of these are important, right? Like, you don't want to stop at like at false beliefs. Like, oh, I've got my false beliefs. I just use those as an excuse. So like, that was what I was thinking while I was talking. I was like, okay, well, you got to see it all the way through, first of all. And then the other thing too, is I remember at the beginning of my anxiety healing journey, those of us with anxiety have the superpower of like rumination and thoughts, right? And so when you're trying to tap in and get tapped into kind of your higher self or your intuition or whatever it is that you're going to call it, how do you discern that voice as or that sense or that intuition as being different from the anxiety voices and the rumination voices and the you know, the self-abandonment voices? How do we, what's the litmus test there?
Well, our feelings will let us know. If the voice is coming from that wounded self, criticizing us, judging us, it's going to feel bad. We're going to still feel anxious. We're going to feel badly in a whole lot of ways. But when we hear the voice of guidance, it feels right. It might not feel good, because sometimes we have to do things that are hard. So it might not feel good, but it's going to feel right inside. And when you take that action, like I said, you're going to feel relief. And so it's our feelings that let us know whether we're hearing the voice of truth or whether we're hearing the lies of our wounded self. Because our wounded self is programmed. It's programmed with hundreds of lies that we learned that may have been truth, may have been true then when we were growing up, but are not true now for us or limiting us. And so one of the ways our inner child lets us know that our wounded self is in charge, telling us lies, trying to control, is anxiety. Anxiety is a message that lets you know that you're off track, that you're not operating from love, that you're not operating as a loving adult, taking good care of yourself, taking loving care of yourself. You're operating from that young child or older child or adolescent that's been programmed with all of these lies. And that's causing anxiety.
Absolutely. And tell me if you find that this is true for you and for people that you work with, that, you know, those kind of wounded children that you make touch with. I've got like three or four of them, right? And they're different ages. And I'll be like, oh, there's the 8-year-old, or oh, there's the 14-year-old. Like they're very specific developmental kind of like ages for me. But now that, you know, once you practice it for a little while, you're like, oh, okay, great. I recognize, right. I know who that was. And you figure out how to listen and engage. But at first you're just like, I don't know, you know, who is that? And where did that come from? And it can feel very overwhelming, but after a while of practicing it, the practice gets quicker. The practice gets less overwhelming. The practice gets easier to kind of dive into, right?
Yes, that's right. It does get much easier. But like anything worth learning, it does take a lot of practice. You know, if somebody wants to be a good musician, they know they have to practice. But sometimes what happens with people doing inner bonding is that they'll do it for like a week or a month and they start to feel so much better. And then they stop doing it. Well, I'm healed. I'm better. And then they go right back to feeling anxious or depressed or whatever. This is a lifetime process, just like being a parent is a lifetime process. So is being a loving parent with yourself, a loving mom and dad with yourself. It's not like you do it and it's done. And so, yes, it takes practice. The more you do it, the more you practice these six steps, the more you develop new neural pathways in your brain for your loving adult. Most of us had no role modeling for being a loving adult. Those people that did were very fortunate, but my parents certainly were not loving adults at all, with themselves, with me at all. So there was no role modeling. And so when I started to practice inner bonding and started to connect to my higher guidance, I saw, okay, that's the role model. My guidance is the role model. I couldn't look around and find role models of being a loving adult. And yet that's what we need to be for that anxiety to go away. And so the more we do it, the more we create those neural pathways. And that's why it becomes easier. Because when we start, like when I started doing this, I had neural pathways in my lower brain like railroad tracks. That's where I would turn to. That was what was automatic. But as I practice inner bonding and develop these new neural pathways in the higher brain, became easier and easier to automatically behave as a loving adult. And that's just wonderful when that happens.
Mm. Okay, so for people who are listening at home and they're intrigued and they want to try it, but they don't have necessarily a spiritual connection, they don't have any sort of faith practice or anything like that for whatever reason, what are the secrets to that spiritual connection and why is it important in this process?
Well, it's so important because we need the role modeling, but they don't even have to believe in anything. They can just ask the question of the air. It's the openness to learning and really wanting to know what's loving and what's true And then things will stop pop will start popping into their mind. And they don't even have to know where it comes from. I've had clients that were atheists, and I don't believe in anything there, but I'll ask the air. And then they started getting answers, and they say, "Well, I don't know where they come from, but I like the answers." Because it is there. And after a while, people get that we can ask those questions. So they don't have to believe in anything, but they have to be open to learning. They have to really want to know what's loving to them and eventually what's loving to others. Because the more we're loving to ourselves, the more we want to share that love with others. And the easier it is to be loving to others, the more we learn to see who we intrinsically are. This is another reason to connect with our guidance. We cannot see our soul, our true self, through the eyes of our wounded self. The wounded self doesn't even know we have a soul. The wounded self thinks that's who we are, which is not. That's a fabrication. We created that as part of our survival. But spirit, God, whatever you want to call it, created our soul. Our soul is a spark of the divine, and it's multifaceted, and we have gifts in there. But the only way we can really see them is through the eyes of love, which is our higher guidance. And so it becomes extremely important to be able to connect to a higher source and ask that source, who am I? Who am I intrinsically? Who was I born as? And invariably, when I put people through this exercise and they look through the eyes of love at their little tiny, like year-old self, they'll say, "Oh, well, I was curious, and I was fun-loving, and I was kind to people." And I mean, all kinds of lovely things start to come out. And that's who we intrinsically are. And when we get that, we're very motivated to be loving to ourselves. And on a broader level, this is so important, because as we learn to see who we are intrinsically, our soul, we start to be able to see the souls of others. We start to be able to get beyond the exterior of the wounded self and to see the beauty of a person's soul. And when we can do that, when people can do that, so many problems of the world would be solved. Racism would be gone. We wouldn't be looking at people externally. Poverty would be gone. We would care about each other. We would want to be there for each other's beautiful soul. So many of the problems come from not knowing who we are and defining ourselves through our wounded self as not good enough, and then being threatened, so threatened by other races or other people's sexuality or whatever it is, and then wanting to control that. You can see where that causes the problems in the world. And so if people really did the work of learning to connect to their higher self, learning to see the beauty of who they are, they would learn to see the beauty of everyone. It's not at all hard once we see our own intrinsic beauty to see that in everyone. And just imagine what kind of world we would have if we valued ourselves and we valued each other. Just imagine what it would be like.
Absolutely. And again, tell me if this was true for you and for people that you work with, but by practicing what you've taught us and spoken to me about many times and healing my anxiety, and it not only allowed me to see other people, but all of a sudden, when I stopped abandoning myself, and that meant putting up a lot of boundaries and doing a lot of my own healing and changing a lot of relationships, I remember feeling before the work started that if I only had better people in my life, or if I only had these kinds of people, or if only my family system were different, the people in my life were different, if these people would all change, I would be happy and I could relax, right? And once I started doing the work to stop abandoning myself, to start healing, not only did I feel better and stop abandoning myself, but all of it was like magic. Like all of these people descended into my life that were of a that were also healing and of the quality that I'd wanted the people that weren't ready to do their own work to rise to and to be for me. And so it was remarkable. I was like, well, that was really strange. And it didn't happen overnight. It wasn't like a bus full of people dropped off outside my house one day, but it was just like all of a sudden, over a few years, I look around now and I'm like, wow, look at the people that are in my life and that I'm surrounded by and that I get to be loved by and that I get to love. It's
Yeah,
been
that's why
incredible.
I know, because when you were abandoning yourself, then people were treating you the way you were treating yourself and were attracted at our common level of self-abandonment or our common level of self-love. So if we really want to attract open, loving, and caring and growing people, we have to become that. And this is true in primary relationships as well. You know, somebody's abandoning themselves and they're attracted to somebody who's also abandoning themselves, but they're both trying to control each other and they're on best behavior and they're doing, you know, their controlling thing to try and get that person to love them. And when that person is not capable of it, just as you're not capable of loving them because you're not loving yourself, then the relationship falls apart. It doesn't work. And that's why so many relationships are not working, because people are coming together at their common level of self-abandonment. And so when I'm working with somebody single, I say, first do your work. You know, don't look for somebody while you're so self-abandoning. You'll have plenty of work to take care of yourself once you're in a relationship, because that challenges everything. But at least do some of your work now to attract a more loving partner. And when they do that, that is exactly what happens.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also because in your relationship with yourself, you're always changing and becoming, whether that's because of your interests or your occupation or the role that you fill in the world, as you know, if you become a parent or just, by the way, you know, I'm a woman, like I'm aging. I feel like every 20 years I become an entirely different person. Right. And so just to like stay along for the ride on your identity, you'd better start doing this work, even if you never interacted with anybody else ever again. Just confronting who you become in the mirror every day, you're just like, wow, I really got to work on making sure I'm loving myself because who is this person that I'm now in relationship with?
I know, and we're going to age and we're going to change.
If
And
we're lucky, right?
well, yeah, I'm going to be 85 this year, and I feel absolutely fantastic because I've been not only eating well, but doing inner bonding and exercising. Those are, I think, three pillars of good health, is dealing with your stress, taking loving care of yourself, and exercising, taking care of yourself emotionally, taking care of your feelings. And but also, I mean, we age, we look different, but when you value yourself intrinsically, it's okay. You don't look at yourself and say, oh my God, you know, I'm getting old, I'm not lovable anymore. No, I mean, I value my wrinkles, I earn them, but they don't define me. My aging doesn't define me. My essence does. And boy, is that wonderful to age valuing who you are in your soul. I just hope so many people do that, because it's a really great way to age.
Absolutely. And I would never, I mean, unless I actually didn't know when you were born, I would never guess you were 85. So I'm going to keep doing what you're doing. And
Right.
every single person that I think of that I want in my life that is of your generation, that like they all have wrinkles. They're all aging and they're all happy. The ones that I really, really admire are happy and like thrilled with their lives and do things that they love and light them up. And the ones that feel and look old don't. It's
Oh, and the ones that are
remarkable.
doing, yeah, the ones that are doing all the plastic surgery and everything, likely are not valuing their essence, or they wouldn't be defining themselves by how they look.
Absolutely. Margaret Paul, you have given us so many gifts today. It's always a joy to be with you. How can people find out more about you, your work, and inner bonding?
Okay, they can go to innerbonding.com. They can start with our free 7-day inner bonding course, which will give them the basis of inner bonding. We have many courses. I have a Love Yourself course, a 30-day course where they'll get emails and videos every day to teach them the inner bonding process. I have many, many published books, 12. My recent one just came out, Lonely No More, The Astonishing Power of Inner Bonding. That's a great way to learn inner bonding and an inner bonding workbook. I do a master class the first and third Wednesday of every month, where I bring people through an inner bonding process. I talk on a topic, and then I do laser sessions with people, short 15-minute sessions, so that people can actually see the power of inner bonding, even in a short session. It's so powerful. And I would love people to join me on that. I work with people, I work with individuals and couples. We also have a fabulous inner bonding training program for facilitators. And so we have many very, very well-trained facilitators. If people want to work with people around the world, most of us work online. So there's a lot available for people to learn and get support with inner bonding.
Fantastic. Margaret Paul, thank you again so much for being with us.
Oh, you're so welcome, Megan. It's just a joy to be with you.